Okay. Text 12. Increasing his cheer. I think we might have done this.
No.
Increasing his cheerfulness, the grandsire of the Kuru dynasty, the grandfather, vibrating his conch shell very loudly, with a roaring sound like that of a lion, that valiant grandsire. What am I saying? No. Increasing his cheerfulness, the valiant grandsire of the Kuru dynasty, grandfather Bhishma, vibrating a roaring sound like that of a lion, blew his conch shell very loudly. Then Bhishma, the great valiant grandsire of the Kuru dynasty, the grandfather of fighters, blew his conch shell very loudly, making a sound like the roar of a lion, giving Duryodhana joy. The grandsire of the Kuru dynasty could understand the inner meaning of the heart of his grandson Duryodhana. That means he could understand the
fear,
the intention of the heart of his grandson Duryodhana. And out of his natural compassion for him, he tried to cheer him by blowing his conch shell very loudly, befitting his position as a lion. Indirectly, by the symbolism of the conch shell, means by using his conch shell, he informed his depressed grandson Duryodhana that he had no chance of victory in the battle because the Supreme Lord Krishna was on the other side. But still, it was his duty to conduct the fight, and no pains would be spared in that connection. 13.
It is under explanation.
That's okay.
Just check that.
Gopi Brahmanguru told me that book has, there is a room for improvement in that book.
But he is using Brahmanguru, just check that. It's correct only. Just check it. It makes it very...
This is directly taken from Maradevidya Bhushan.
Well, not directly, but he's, despite his heroic words, this victory or defeat lies in the Lord's hands. I will do my duty and lay down my life for your sake. But that will not guarantee your victory. This, I think, is Gopi Parandam Guru. Because he says in the introduction that I'm thankful to Gopi Parandam Guru providing the translations of...
No, but this is not literal.
Hey, put it in the quotes.
It's not. It's not literally taken from any of the acharyas.
No, but he may have taken Bhagavad Gita Guru may have translated Bhagavad Gita. Check if that it does not match. Maybe.
No, it does not match.
Check it.
Yeah.
I think there's some poetic license. Probably should check it.
No, I'll show you both.
No, Vishnu Chakravarti doesn't speak only about this. Symbolism of consciousness.
No, first of all, it's not a translation, it's simply expressing his mind. When you express your mind also, you put quotes, that's all. What is that?
Vishnu Chakravarti doesn't talk about it. Bhagavad Gita Guru.
मुखतः किंचित अनुक्त्वा शंखनादमात्र करणेन जयपराजयौ खलु ईश्वर अधीनौ त्वदर्थे क्षत्रधर्मेण देहं त्यक्ष्यामि इति व्यज्यते. That's all.
What is he saying?
He is saying that victory and defeat are indeed only under the control of the Supreme Lord. For your sake, I will abandon my body by the duty of according to the duty of a kshatriya.
So that means that even though I have abandoned, doesn't mean that you will win. That's what it means.
That's okay, but it's not literal, that's all I'm saying.
So, no, but okay. Bhagavan does not always translate, it gives the sense of it also.
It's okay, but it's not literal, that's all I'm saying.
Okay.
That's why I said it's based on that, it's directly taken from that.
Mm-hmm.
13. Thereafter, conch shells, large drums, small drums and kettle drums and horns all of a sudden were simultaneously sounded. That combined sound became tumultuous After that, the conchs, drums, bugles, trumpets and horns were all suddenly sounded, and the combined sound was tumultuous. What is this? No purpose?
No.
In the printed book also no purpose?
No purpose.
Thereafter, Krishna, the husband of the goddess of fortune, and Arjuna, the son of Pandu, situated on a great chariot yoked with white horses, sounded their transcendental conch shells. On the other side, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot drawn by white horses, sounded their transcendental conch shells. In contrast with the conch shell blown by Bhishma Deva, the conch shells in the hands of Krishna and Arjuna are described as transcendental. The sounding of the transcendental conch shells indicated that there was no hope of victory for the other side, because Krishna was on the side of the Pandavas. Jayastu Panduputranam Yesham Pakshe Janardhanaha. Victory is always with persons like the sons of Pandu, because Lord Krishna is associated with them. I could not trace this. Where could this be from? Could this be from Mahabharata? Should I check it?
Yeah. The Prabhupada is unique.
Yeah, Prabhupada sometimes adds some very interesting pieces of information.
No, actually one thing I was thinking was, as we're doing it, we should immediately say which ones are Prabhupada's unique in the recordings. You said Gita Mahatmya is from Padma Purana, right?
Yeah, that's the Gita Mahatmya in Padma Purana.
Yes, Bhagavad Gita, you should use Gita Mahatmya in that introduction?
Only the Gita, Sugita, Kartavya, only that.
You probably use everything here. So.
Oh, that is because in that edition it comes in the final.
Which edition?
In the edition, that particular edition.
Which particular edition you talking about? Prabhupada's?
The edition that he used.
Of?
The edition of Bhagavad Gita that he used.
Valdevdi Bhushan's?
Uh-huh.
Which edition did he use?
The edition that his Guru Maharaj printed.
Oh, is it? Bhakti Sarasvati Thakur which he printed.
Mm.
But you said he never wrote an interesting comment on Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, he didn't write a commentary, but he printed it.
Not only the texts.
No. How do I know what to do? I don't have time right now. I should add this into my folio. I'm creating my own folio. Victory is always with persons like the sons of Pandu, because Lord Krishna is associated with them. And whenever and wherever the Lord is present, the goddess of fortune is also there, because the goddess of fortune never lives alone without her husband. Therefore, victory and purushasya anapayini. నిత్యైవేష జగన్మాత విష్ణుశ్రీరణపాయిని యథాసర్వగతో విష్ణుస్తథైవేయం ద్విజోత్తమ. విష్ణుపురాణ 1.8.16. Nityai Vesha Jagannamata, this mother of the universe, Shri, she is certainly eternal. She is inseparable from Vishnu. Just as he is all pervading, she is also all pervading. Artho Vishnu Riyam Vani Nitiresha Nayoharihi Bodho Vishnu Riyam Buddhi Dharmo So Sadkriyatriyam Sashta Vishnu Riyam Srishti Shri Bhuva. Fantastic. Vishnu Purana is very nice.
So you just quote this thing also in the recording thing there, no?
What?
Vishnu Purana what? 1.8.16.
Yeah. It's starting actually. Vishnu Purana is very nice book. Can be heard with Sridhar Swami's commentary. All very nice books. Vishnu Purana is very nice book. Very, very subtle. Therefore, Vishnu and fortune, sorry, victory and fortune were awaiting Arjuna, as indicated by the transcendental sound produced by the conch shell of Vishnu or Lord Krishna. Besides that, the chariot on which both the friends were seated had been donated by Agni, the fire god, to Arjuna, and this indicated that this chariot was capable of conquering all sides wherever it was drawn over the three.
What
waters.
Is the connection between Agni and the chariot being capable?
Agni had a mystical chariot which was given to Arjuna. That chariot, if you ride on it, you can conquer the three worlds. Mahabharata, all this. 15. Rishikesha, Krishna, the Lord who directs the senses of the devotees, blew the conch shell named Panchajanya. Dhananjaya, Arjuna, the winner of wealth, blew the conch shell named Devadatta. The voracious eater Bhima, who performs Herculean tasks, blew the terrific conch shell named Poundra. Lord Krishna blew his conch shell called Panchajanya. Arjuna blew his, the Devadatta, and Bhima, the voracious eater and performer of Herculean tasks, blew his terrific conch shell called Poundra. Lord Krishna is referred to as Rishikesha in these words because he is the owner of all senses. The living entities are part and parcel of him, and therefore the senses of the living entities are also part and parcel of his senses. The impersonalists cannot account for the senses of the living entities, and therefore they are always anxious to describe all living entities as senseless or impersonal. The Lord, situated in the hearts of all living entities, directs their senses, but he directs in terms of the surrender of the living entity. And in the case of a pure devotee, he directly controls the senses. Here on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the Lord directly controls the transcendental senses of Arjuna, and thus his particular name of Rishikesha. The Lord has different names according to his different activities. For example, his name is Madhusudana because he killed the demon of the name Madhu. His name is in the form of Hayagriva, he killed Madhu, if I remember correctly. His name is Govinda because he gives pleasure to the cows and to the senses. Go means cow, go also means senses. His name is Vasudeva because he appeared as a son of Vasudeva. His name is Devaki Nandana because he accepted Devaki as his mother. His name is Yashoda Nandana because he awarded his childhood pastimes to Yashoda at Vrindavan. His name is Parthasarathi, long E, because he worked as charioteer of his friend Arjuna. Similarly, his name is Rishikesha because he gave direction to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Arjuna is referred to as Dhananjaya in this verse because he helped his elder brother in fetching wealth when it was required by the king to make expenditures for different sacrifices. Similarly, Bhima is known as Vrikodara because he could eat as voraciously as he could perform Herculean tasks, such as killing the demon Hidimba. So the particular types of conch shells blown by the different personalities on the side of the Pandavas, beginning with the lords, were all very encouraging to the fighting soldiers. On the other side, there were no such credits, nor the presence of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Director, nor that of the Goddess of Fortune. So they were predestined to lose the battle, and that was a message announced by the sounds of the conch shells. 16 onwards. Yudhishthir, the son of Kunti, the king, blew the conch named Ananta Vijaya. Nakula and Sahadeva blew the conches named Sughosha and Manipushpaka respectively. The king of Kashi, Varanasi, who was a great archer, and Shikhandi, who can fight alone against thousands. Drishtadyumna, the son of King Drupada, Virata, the prince who gave shelter to the Pandavas while they were in disguise. He was not a prince, he was actually a king. This must be the editor, Hayagriva Das's. Satiki, the same as Yudhana, the charioteer of Lord Krishna, who had never been vanquished. Drupada, the king of Panchala, the sons of Draupadi, all the sons of Draupadi. O king, Abhimanyu, the son of Subhadra, who was mighty armed. All of them, each separately, blew their respective conch shells. King Yudhishthira, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell to Ananta Vijaya, and Nakula and Sahadeva blew the Sughosha and Manipushpaka. That great archer, the king of Kashi, the great fighter Shikhandi, Drishtadyumna, Virata, the unconquerable Satiki, Drupada, the sons of Draupadi, and others, O king, such as the mighty arm son of Subhadra, all blew their respective conch shells. Sanjay informed King Dhritarashtra very tactfully that his unwise policy of deceiving the sons of Pandu and endeavouring to enthrone his own sons on the seat of the kingdom was not very laudable. The signs already clearly indicated that the whole Kuru dynasty would be killed in that great battle, beginning with the grandsire Bhishma, down to the grandsons like Abhimanyu and others, including kings from many states of the world. All were present there and all were doomed. The whole catastrophe was due to King Dhritarashtra because he encouraged the policy followed by his sons. So Dhritarashtra was a passive criminal. Suryodhana was the active criminal. This is 19. That vibration resounding.
Dhritarashtra is the primary cause.
No, Dhritarashtra's whole problem was he did not prevent his sons, that's all.
No, but he was not, the Prabhupada doesn't portray him in any good quality, no?
No, he didn't actively do anything wrong. He just passively allowed everything to go wrong. Even though he was instructed thousands of times by everybody.
So can you suggest to Duryodhana different things?
Sometimes he says he is the personification of Hridaya Daurbalya, weakness of determination. That vibration resounding on the surface of the earth, on the sky and the surface of the earth, shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra and became uproarious. The blowing of these different conch shells became uproarious, vibrating both in the sky and on the earth. It shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. And Bhishma and the others on the side of Duryodhana blew their respective conch shells. There was no heartbreaking on the part of the Pandavas. Such occurrences are not mentioned. But in this particular verse it is mentioned that the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra were shattered by the sounds vibrated by the Pandavas party. This is due to the Pandavas and their confidence in Lord Krishna. One who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord has nothing to fear, even in the midst of the greatest calamity. 20. Thereupon, O King, the son of Pandu, Arjuna, whose flag was marked with Hanuman, while about to engage in releasing his arrows, looking upon the sons of Dhritarashtra who had thus situated themselves. Taking up his bow, said these words unto Lord Krishna. Then, at that time, Arjuna, the son of Pandu, seated in the chariot bearing the flag marked with Hanuman, took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. O king, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra drawn in military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words. The battle was just about to begin. It is understood from the above statement that the sons of Dhritarashtra were more or less disheartened by the unexpected arrangement of military force by the Pandavas, who were guided by the direct instructions of Lord Krishna on the battlefield. The emblem of Hanuman on the flag of Arjuna is another sign of victory, because Hanuman cooperated with Lord Ram in the battle between Ram and Ravana, and Lord Ram emerged victorious. Now both Ram and Hanuman were present on the chariot of Arjuna to help him. Lord Krishna is Ram himself, and wherever Lord Ram is, his eternal servitor Hanuman and his eternal consort Sita, the goddess of fortune, are present. Therefore Arjuna had no cause to fear any enemies whatsoever. And above all, the Lord of the senses, Lord Krishna, was personally present to give him direction. Thus, all good counsel was available to Arjuna in the matter of executing the battle in such auspicious conditions arranged for his eternal devotee.
By the Lord. Lord.
Arranged by the Lord for his eternal devotee lay the signs of assured victory.
So Hanuman on the flag is not just a symbolism. He is actually factually present.
He was factually present. He would terrify the soldiers. He would roar.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Mahabharata mentions that?
Yeah.
In fact, if you look at Sarantan, it's a very nice episode. How nice he has given that episode. About how he came to participate in the battle.
In this one?
Yeah, just check that. See here.
Yeah, it's between Hanuman and Bhima.
Yeah.
See? Arjuna said, O infallible one, please keep my chariot between both the armies as long as I look upon all these persons who have arrayed on the battlefield desiring to fight, with whom I have to fight in this Rana Samudyame, how do you explain? In this attempt of strife. Arjuna said, O infallible one, please draw my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those present here who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms. Although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, out of his causeless mercy he was engaged in the service of his friend. He never fails in his affection for his devotees, and thus he is addressed herein as infallible. As charioteer, he had to carry out the orders of Arjuna, and since he did not hesitate to do so, he is addressed as infallible. Although he had accepted the position of a charioteer for his devotee, his supreme position was not challenged. In all circumstances, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Rishikesha, the Lord of the total senses. The relationship between the Lord and his servitor is very sweet and transcendental. The servitor is always ready to render service to the Lord, and similarly the Lord is always seeking an opportunity to render some service to the devotee. He takes greater pleasure in his pure devotees assuming the advantageous position of ordering him than he does in being the giver of orders. Since he is master, everyone is under his orders, and no one is above him to order him. But when he finds that a pure devotee is ordering him, he obtains transcendental pleasure, although he is the infallible master in all circumstances. As a pure devotee of the Lord, Arjuna had no desire to fight with his cousins and brothers, but he was forced to come onto the battlefield by the obstinacy of Duryodhana, who was never agreeable to any peaceful negotiation. They had asked for five pieces of land, no?
And then Duryodhana said, I will not even give land to put five needles. Because it was their swadharma to fight, to rule. This is the highest example of acquiesce morality. Just to do their swadharma, so many millions of people are dying. They could have just said, no, we don't need anything at all. Duryodhana said, you don't ask me anything, there will be no war. This is what Dhritarashtra said. You don't ask my sons for anything and there will be no war. War is bad. He gave message through Sanjaya.
How will they live there?
Whatever. They don't ask. They don't ask. That was Dhritarashtra's point. Don't ask for anything. So just for... It is purely the entire Kurukshetra war was just for act-based morality.
No, but what about the fact that, okay, suppose they are Kshatriya, they can also perform the duty of Vaishya if they want, right?
Emergency.
So under emergency, if they wanted, they could have done that. To avoid the war.
To avoid war? Why? Bhima, in fact, at one point he said, I don't want a war. Why so many people should suffer?
Why?
Well, Lord Krishna chastised him.
Why? Who should suffer?
Why is all these people will have to suffer? Lord Krishna chastised
him. You see?
But what is this, no? You should go for war, it's dharma. Krishna was pushing for war. If they don't agree, then you should have war. One full year they negotiated. Udyoga Padma, 1 year they negotiated. It's not that after the 12 plus 1 years were over, immediately there was war. One full year they negotiated.
It looks like Krishna was always in all circumstances quite quite firm in all these things, right? In Draupadi's, when their sons are killed, even that time is quite strong.
Yeah.
When they capture Ashwatthama.
Krishna says not kill. Krishna and Bhima say kill. Everybody else says don't kill. That's why this Madhva group they always say, see, or Acharya, Bhima, he's always in the side.
But you said that he didn't want war.
He said that.
What does Madhvacharya say about
that? Madhvacharya always says that. Mahabharata is Acharya. Bhima only said that. He's a compassionate person. Not. Of course, he's only talking about Vayu. Up to Vayu, even according to Madhvacharya, they are all Kshatriyas, maximum. Brahma is Brahma.
Vayu is born below, one below Brahma.
But he is Kshatriya. Therefore, he was very anxious to see who the leading persons present on the battlefield were. Although there was no question of a peacemaking endeavor on the battlefield, he wanted to see them again to see how much they were bent upon demanding an unwanted war. Unwanted war. Let me see those who will be fighting.
So it looks like Krishna was not a peacemaker just like that. If yes, you have to do the right thing.
You have to benefit everyone.
So by only doing the right thing you can benefit.
Yes.
For the sake of peace or whatever, you know what I'm trying to say?
No, but see, first of all, in the Vedic conception, what is beneficial, what is not beneficial is seen over many lifetimes.
Okay.
You don't see only one lifetime.
So dharma is always considered how you should act.
Yes.
Within the rules of dharma, you can be...
You should have the right intention. Intention is important, I agree. But it is within the framework of act-based morality. That is the distinction between sattvic and rajasic engagement in dharma. In rajasic activities, you are engaging in the same activity of, let's say, yajna, dana, tapa. Okay, but you are doing it with the desire to attain dharmartha kama, mukti.
Okay.
But when you do the same activities desiring mukti, then it becomes sattvic activity. And it gives up the result.
Okay.
But the activity is identical.
Okay. What's your point?
So once you come to the right activity, then the next step is what should be the motive.
So one thing I am noticing here repeatedly is that Krishna is very firm that principles should be principles should be followed even at the cost of disturbing peace.
No, principles should be followed at the cost of disturbing peace apparently. It's only
apparently
it disturbs. It leads to long-term peace.
Yeah.
It leads to long-term peace. From the long-term perspective, you have to calculate. You cannot calculate just. If you see like that, then you can't even function as a doctor because the patient will cry. Oh.
I'm just talking in terms of philosophy. So we should always speak the right philosophy even if it disturbs some people.
No. If it disturbs people for long-term and superior happiness, you can sacrifice short-term inferior happiness. That is the point. That's all. We're not interested in giving unhappiness to others. That is very wrong.
Definitely.
It is Jiva Himsa. It is against Vedic teachings completely. Na Himsiyat Sarva Bhutani. No living creature should be hurt. That is a fundamental teaching. But long-term...
But hurt, if they are hurt in the process of performing one's duty properly...
Now again, the converse is also true. Just as there is long-term happiness, there is also long-term unhappiness. Okay, and short-term unhappiness is preferable to long-term unhappiness.
Okay.
See, certain activity, now if you engage in punya, it will definitely lead to happiness, more happiness. If you engage in papa, it will definitely lead to more unhappiness. Okay, so you cannot change that. If I engage in sinful activity, definitely I have to suffer for at least 10 lifetimes. If I engage in pious activities, I definitely have to enjoy for at least 10 lifetimes. Those rules cannot be changed. But I can just decide which one to do. And the consideration should always be from the long-term perspective. Long-term and even in long-term and also grade of happiness. The happiness of the demigods is actually superior to the happiness of human beings, which is superior to the happiness of animals. So therefore, sinful activity should be avoided. Because sinful activities means I will be given animal body. And I will get very low grade happiness. And if people are making others sinful, then these people should be violently removed. Because there is no other way.
Like Bhishma.
No, like Duryodhana.
The Kali Yuga, you cannot do that.
In Kali Yuga, you cannot do that. This is a principle prior to Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, we have to remove that demonic mentality. That is Lord Chaitanya's principle. Let me see those who will be fighting, those who have assembled here, wishing well for the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra in the fight. Let me see those who have come here to fight, wishing to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra. It was an open secret that Duryodhana wanted to usurp the kingdom of the Pandavas by evil plans in collaboration with his father Dhritarashtra. Therefore, all persons who had joined the side of Duryodhana must have been birds of the same feather. Arjuna wanted to see them on the battlefield before the fight was begun, just to learn who they were. But he had no intention of proposing peace negotiations with them. It was also a fact that he wanted to see them to make an estimate of the strength which he had to face, although he was quite confident of victory because Krishna was sitting by his side. So he also wanted to estimate.
This is Guru Dharma.
Yeah. One point I can derive from this is Arjuna is very practical in rendering his service to Krishna. His service requires that he should have proper estimate. Understand? Even our preachers, they should have a clear estimate of what they are facing in their preaching field. 24, Sanjaya said, addressed thus Lord Krishna, Lord Krishna addressed thus by Arjuna, or descendant of Bharata, placing the finest chariot in the midst of both the armies. This is half a sentence. Sanjay said, O descendant of Bharata, having thus been addressed by Arjuna, Lord Krishna drew up the fine chariot in the midst of the armies of both parties. In this verse, Arjuna is referred to as Gudakesha. Gudaka means sleep, and one who conquers sleep is called Gudakesha. Sleep also means ignorance. On what basis is Prabhupada saying that?
Comes no before Krishna Chakravarti.
It is this concept that sleep. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-control, and the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. So it is considered to be sleeping. Also, Avidya Sutta, what is that? That's one. Where is this infamous oop?
Let's continue.
See? Anadimaya supto yadajiva prabhudyate. See, jiva is said to be sleeping. Shruti also says that. So Arjuna conquered both sleep and ignorance because of his friendship with Krishna. As a great devotee of Krishna, he could not forget Krishna even for a moment, because that is the nature of a devotee. Either in waking or in sleep, a devotee of the Lord can never be free from thinking of Krishna's name, form, qualities and pastimes. Thus a devotee of Krishna can conquer both sleep and ignorance simply by thinking of Krishna constantly. This is called Krishna consciousness or Samadhi. Ask Hrishikesha, or the director of the senses and mind of every living entity, Krishna could understand Arjuna's purpose in placing the chariot in the midst of the armies. Thus he did so and spoke as follows. 25. In front of all the chiefs of the world, and grandfather Bhishma and the teacher of Drona, he said, O son of Pritha, just behold all of these members of the Kuru dynasty assembled in the presence of Bhishma, Drona and all the other chieftains of the world. The Lord said, just behold, Partha, all the Kurus assembled here. He didn't say, behold all your enemies. He said, behold all the Kurus. As the super soul of all living entities, Lord Krishna could understand what was going on in the mind of Arjuna. The use of the word Rishikesha in this connection indicates that he knew everything. And the word Partha, meaning the son of Pritha or Kunti, is also similarly significant in reference to Arjuna. As a friend, he wanted to inform Arjuna that because Arjuna was the son of Pritha, the sister of his own father Vasudeva, he had agreed to be the charioteer of Arjuna. Now, what did Krishna mean when he told Arjuna to behold the Kurus? Did Arjuna want to stop there and not fight? Krishna never expected such things from the son of his aunt Pritha. The mind of Arjuna was thus predicted by the Lord in friendly joking. 26. There, Arjuna could see standing fathers, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, friends, fathers-in-law, well-wishers of both parties of the armies. There Arjuna could see within the midst of the armies of both parties, his fathers, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, friends, and also his fathers-in-law and well-wishers on the battlefield, Arjuna could see all kinds of relatives. He could see persons like Bhurishrava, who were his father's contemporaries, grandfathers Bhishma and Somadatta, teachers like Dronacharya and Kripacharya, maternal uncles like Shalya and Shakuni, brothers like Duryodhana, sons like Lakshmana, friends like Ashwatthama, well-wishers like Kritavarma, etc. He could see also the armies which contained many of his friends. 27. That son of Kunti, after seeing all of them, all kinds of relatives situated there, overwhelmed by compassion of a high grade, spoke thus while lamenting. When the son of Kunti, Arjuna, saw all these different grades of friends and relatives, he became overwhelmed with compassion and spoke thus. 28. Arjuna said, O Krishna, after seeing all these kinsmen present in a fighting spirit, the limbs of my body are quivering and my mouth is drying up. Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up. Any man who has genuine devotion to the Lord has all the good qualities which are found in godly persons or in the demigods, whereas the non-devotee, however advanced he may be in material qualification for education and culture, lacks in godly qualities. Now this is directly this verse from 5th canto which he quotes later on. As such, Arjuna, just after seeing his kinsmen, friends and relatives on the battlefield, was at once overwhelmed by compassion for them who had so decided to fight amongst themselves. As far as his soldiers were concerned, he was sympathetic from the beginning, but he felt compassion even for the soldiers of the opposite party, foreseeing their imminent death. And while he was so thinking, the limbs of his body began to quiver and his mouth became dry. He was more or less astonished to see their fighting spirit. Practically, the whole community, all blood relatives of Arjuna, had come to fight with him. This overwhelmed a kind devotee like Arjuna. Although it is not mentioned here, still one can easily imagine that not only were Arjuna's bodily limbs quivering and his mouth drying up, but he was also crying out of compassion. Such symptoms in Arjuna were not due to weakness, but to his soft-heartedness, a characteristic of a pure devotee of the Lord. This is reality. Arjuna's compassion is due to him being a pure devotee.
But the next verse.
But now what's going to happen is Krishna is now going to cover him in illusion, and then he's going to speak just as he would speak had he been in weakness of heart.
No, but then wait.
It is going. It's coming soon.
Next verse, you see what problem.
Yeah,
is.
It's coming there. So this is reality. It is said, therefore, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvair gunaistatra sam asate sura harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna manorathena satidhavato bahi. One who has unflinching devotion for the personality of God, it has all the good qualities of the demigods. But one who is not a devotee of the Lord has only material qualifications that are of little value. This is because he is hovering on the mental plane and is certain to be attracted by the glaring material energy. 29. There is trembling on my body. My hair is standing on end. The bow of Arjuna is slipping from my hand. Gandiva's celebrated bow. And my skin is burning. My whole body is trembling. My hair is standing on end. My bow, Gandiva, is slipping from my hand. And my skin is burning. There are two kinds of trembling of the body and two kinds of standings of the hair on end. Such phenomena occur either in great spiritual ecstasy or out of great fear under material conditions. There is no fear in transcendental realization. This innocent statement is actually pregnant with meaning. Very, very important statement. In the Upanishads, there are many, many statements like this. There is no fear in transcendental realization. Very, very important statement. Arjuna's symptoms in this situation are out of material fear, namely loss of life. This is evident from other symptoms also. He became so impatient that his famous bow, Gandiva, was slipping from his hands, and because his heart was burning from within, he was feeling a burning sensation of the skin. All these are due to a material conception of
life. So now he speaks exactly opposite of what he spoke.
Yeah, and that will become clarified here. Okay. Next.
Let's see.
Nor am I able to stay, nor am I able to stand. That's what it means. I seem to be, my mind seems to be forgetting. I see just the opposite causes. Oh, killer of the demon Keshi, Krishna, I am now unable to stand here any longer. I am forgetting myself and my mind is reeling. I see only causes of misfortune, oh Krishna, killer of the Keshi demon. Due to his impatience, Arjuna was unable to stay on the battlefield and he was forgetting himself on account of this weakness of his mind. Excessive attachment for material things puts a man in such a bewildering condition of existence. Bhayam dvitiya abhinive shatah syat. Such fearfulness and loss of mental equilibrium take place in persons who are too affected by material conditions. Arjuna envisioned only painful reverses in the battlefield. He would not be happy even by gaining victory over the foe. The words nimittana viparitani are significant. When a man sees only frustration in his expectations, he thinks, why am I here? Everyone is interested in himself and his own welfare. No one is interested in the Supreme Self. Arjuna is showing ignorance of his real self-interest by Krishna's will. This is what reconciles that.
Well, no, but the first one is compassion, second one is not, is it?
No, that
the symptoms
is,
are similar.
No, no. That is the reality. In reality, Arjuna, like a real Vaishnava, he feels that.
Okay.
And that is a description of reality.
Okay.
The second is a description of the effect of his ignorance, which has come about by Krishna's will.
When trembling of the body. First of all, it says not quivering. Already in the first.
That
one
is all the symptom of both of them. Both of them. The reality is Arjuna is a Vaishnava. Any pure Vaishnava will actually have that kind of compassion.
The quivering or
no? No, that compassion. Sripaya paraya, that parakripa will be there.
Yeah.
Okay. That is very important to understand.
Okay, but then in that same verse he speaks, Prabhupada says that you can imagine that he's also crying out of compassion. Not only his mouth is drying up, all those things he says, right?
No, but any genuine Vaishnava will have all these good qualities. He will not tolerate others' unhappiness.
But trembling will not happen, he says, no.
No, trembling and all is due to...
But then first verse speaks of quivering of the body. Just see, that's where the problem comes. No problem.
Prabhupada is only talking about his attitude.
Not about
not about all these
symptoms. Although it is not mentioned here, look at what he's saying. Some symptoms in Arjuna.
He was also crying out of compassion.
Such symptoms in Arjuna.
You have to check Nectar of Devotion.
Check this thing where Bhurijandra has written something. About this. Apparently.
No.
Well, he writes that for this thing. I think the introduction he writes brings up that point, 29 and 30. He writes in the introduction.
Why introduction?
He brings up this thing that this the good introduction of the book. Contradictions, Prabhupada, go, He doesn't answer it, no?
No, but what I can, from what I notice is, the nectar of devotion talks about the different symptoms of those who are in prema bhakti, no? So I think quivering and all comes there in nectar of devotion.
Okay. Not mouth drying, no?
Why? I'll show you. See, becoming stunned, perspiring, faltering of voice, changing of bodily colors.
Trembling of the body is there, see that?
Trembling of the body. Oh, these are all features of prema bhakti.
I know, but the next line is, Rupa says material, no, trembling.
No, there is material, there is spiritual, both.
Both, okay.
Both. This is reality. This is reality. This is actually a description of reality. In reality, this is what is happening. But in order to make us understand that when we are extremely materialistic, then you experience the same thing on the material sphere. So therefore, Prabhupada is describing the lessons that Krishna wants us to learn from this. That is why Baladeva Vidyabhushan says right in the beginning, this samoham eva kurvan, as if making him deluded.
So the first one are all the symptoms of ecstasy, quivering and mouth drying of mouth.
That is reality.
This also is reality, not trembling.
Reality means spiritual. There are two levels of seeing this.
Yes, okay.
Arjuna as a pure devotee is experiencing that.
But that is ecstasy, no?
It is ecstasy only.
Why should you feel ecstasy seeing those people?
Out of why ecstasy can come due to compassion also. You have to read nectar of devotion. Prabhupada said if you don't read nectar of devotion, three.
No, but did he say ecstasy comes from compassion?
Ishvara Tadhineshu Palisheshu Vishapsucha Prema Mantri Krupa Upeksha. Krupa.
No, but does it say that simple? Okay.
But then what? All of these are natural only. Prabhupada himself, some disciple told that once Prabhupada, when he was thinking about how much people are in suffering, he started to cry with tears coming from his eyes. So, what is that?
Okay, so...
That is reality. Reality, when I keep saying reality, I mean that is what is actually going on. This is the lesson that Krishna wants us to learn. All these statements, all this purport to 29 and all that. This is for us to learn. He is using Arjuna to teach us a lesson. He is...
Okay, but what is Arjuna? Arjuna is experiencing spiritual ecstasy only throughout 28, 29, everything. But he is saying Arjuna's symptoms in the same.
But he is deluding him.
When is he deluding? This is the question, 28 or 29?
It could be earlier also, it doesn't matter. But it is important, if you don't explain that fact, then you will start thinking that Arjuna is just an ordinary conditioned soul. You have to make people understand that he is an eternal associate of Krishna. He is just being used for this purpose, for teaching, that's all. And if Prabhupada doesn't explain this, then we will never learn this lesson also.
What lesson?
The lesson that if you get into Maya, you get into all this. You start crying, oh, all these things happen to you. So he has to use Arjuna to teach all this lesson. And Prabhupada has to make us understand Krishna's lesson.
Okay, so the question that they are asking there is, Arjuna, okay, this is some confusion now. Arjuna is experiencing what? 28, 29, everything.
He is in a state of compassion. That is reality. But you are not supposed to try to understand that. You are supposed to understand you should not engage in material activities because you should not get into all this trembling and this and that. That's all. This is at the level of Bhagavad Gita, that's all one is allowed. One should not think too much. It's all, you are not the body, you should learn the lesson.
Okay, so you can say whatever Arjuna is experiencing is a state of, due to state of compassion.
That is reality, yes.
But,
look, I'll show you.
No, I'm just trying to, I got it that it's being put on delusion, but what point?
This is Brihad Bhagavatamrita, okay? 2.3.170. The great souls who spontaneously serve the, let me read this out. Mahashaya ye harinama sevaka sugopya tad bhakti mahanide swayam prakasha bhitya vyavahara bhangi bhi swadosha dukkhan yamadarshayanti te. The great souls who spontaneously serve the names of Lord Hari fear to reveal the vast treasure of his confidential devotional service, so they behave in peculiar ways to show their own faults and unhappiness. Commentary. What about advanced worshippers like Bharat Maharaj, whose impending sinful reactions apparently kept going on? Okay. In response to that, he speaks that verse, and here is the next verse also. Tan nama sankirtana matrato khila bhakta haresyur hata dukha dushana kechit tathapi prabhuvat kripakula lokan sadacharam imam prashasati. All the devotees of the Lord are freed from contamination and misery simply by the sankirtana of his names. Yet some devotees, as disturbed by compassion as the Lord himself, act in these ways to teach people civilized behavior. By the examples of their own lives, they show the consequences of violating the laws of God and material nature. For if people fail to learn how to act according to civilized standards, their hearts will remain contaminated by sinful desires and they will never become inclined toward the Lord's devotional service. Dussanga dosham bharatadayo yatha durdyuta dosham cha yudhishthiradaya brahmasvabhitim cha nirgadayo mala pradarshayan svavyavaharato janan. As Bharata and others showed the fault of bad association, Yudhishthira and others the fault of gambling, and Nriga and others the fear caused by taking a Brahmana's property, pure souls generally use their own behavior to teach the people.
Even Saubari Muni is considered as not a fault of mood.
According to Sanatan Goswami?
Well, faultless. Of course, his opinion has to be taken seriously. No?
Yeah. This is Vaikuntha Duta's opinion. So there are two levels when the Lord's associates in this world try to do good to others. There are two levels. One is reality. One is what is in reality what it is. The other is how they behave in such a manner that we can learn from it. So sometimes Bhagavatam discusses only that aspect which we are meant to learn. Like Mahabharata only discusses the defects of gambling and so on. It doesn't reveal that Yudhishthira is a pure devotee. Then nobody will learn. Then they'll think that, oh, you know, is a pure devotee, okay, then why, there's no lesson. Similarly, in 5th canto Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami only talks about the problems that Bharata came across in being attached to the deer. Similarly, here, Prabhupada keeps talking about the problems that come upon us if we become materialistic. Then we exhibit all these symptoms.
But Arjuna is exhibiting due to his compassion.
Arjuna by himself is like that, but Krishna seemingly puts him in a delusion, in a deluded state. Much before, as soon as he said, look at these gurus, that's why I told you, he's saying look at these gurus, he's not saying look at these enemies whom you have to kill. Look at these gurus, look at your family members.
So Krishna is the one who planted that seed into Arjuna's mind. These are Kurus, these are your family members, these are your people. So then what does he see? Instead of seeing enemies to kill, he sees fathers, brothers-in-law, all these friends, sons, grandsons, he sees all this. That is when he had actually put him seemingly under delusion.
It is important to make people understand two things.
I don't have a problem there. My only thing is, how would you explain this, what Prabhupada is doing here?
Okay,
if you
say
that point, he put him into illusion, then he's saying here it is due to, because of his compassion's pure duty. Next verse is saying it is, how do you reconcile that? You have to reconcile it.
That's what I'm saying. In reality, it is because he's a pure devotee. That is the reality.
So he's experiencing these symptoms as a pure devotee?
Yes. That is reality. But he says it and that's it. For the rest of Bhagavad Gita, practically speaking, Prabhupada doesn't speak that. That's all. He just leaves it.
That means after that only he became, whatever.
No, when the moment Krishna says that, he immediately put him under that yoga maya.
This is after that then how can it be because it's pure devotee?
No. He puts him in yoga maya only. It is not due to Mahamaya he's thinking on these things. But he is behaving as if he is under Mahamaya.
That's the point I'm trying to say. He is behaving as if he is under Mahamaya. But then why is Prabhupada saying that this is because of his compassion? I mean, it's like because of his heart, because of a pure devotee, because he's a pure devotee.
Look. Arjuna is showing ignorance of his real self-interest by Krishna's will.
Okay.
So by Krishna's will indicates that he is actually under yoga maya.
Okay.
But here Krishna has used his yoga maya potency in a peculiar manner. Normally when Krishna applies yoga maya potency, he will not do this.
Okay.
Normally when Krishna applies yoga maya on Yashoda, then it only increases her affection for him and so on.
Okay,
normally when he applies yoga maya on Arjuna, he makes him attracted to him. And the moment you are attracted to him, you become more and more enlightened only. Bhakti, vairagya, vidya, bhakti go together. Okay, but here apparently vairagya is going down and vidya is also going down. Okay, this is a peculiar application of yoga maya. And this is only for enlightening others.
Okay.
So he is going to make him behave as if he is ignorant of his real self-interest.
That's now, but then the previous verse, that's what
no,
I mean.
Now means from that point. From that point, look at these gurus. From that point. From that point. From that point. So in the previous purport, he explained the implication of this by Krishna's will.
He didn't really explain that in the previous one.
Where he is a natural devotee, a devotee of the Supreme Lord, has all good qualities.
Okay.
So from that we understand that Arjuna in reality is a pure devotee.
Okay. See, Arjuna in reality is a pure devotee.
But externally, he has been made to think like this. He is
like
made to He is made to think as if he's an ignorant person. He is made to think like this. By yoga maya, Krishna is making him think like this.
Yes, I agree. But then, is it making him think in ignorance due to which he is speaking like that?
Yes.
The previous verse?
Yes. Yes.
Then what about the compassion? Then how do you reconcile the two then?
No, he has natural compassion.
Okay.
He has natural compassion.
Okay.
But there is also this material compassion which has been superimposed on top of that natural compassion. You understand?
Okay.
He has natural compassion. You cannot become a pure Vaishnava unless you have that compassion. So even sadhakas have it. What to speak of Siddha Vaishnavas? They naturally have
it. But the previous verse, that symptoms he says is because of this thing, no? Here they are saying the symptoms are due to this. That's where the complication comes.
No. See, a conditioned soul, a normal conditioned soul, other than Arjuna.
Okay.
He shows ignorance of his real self-interest not by Krishna's will.
Yeah.
Okay. Then there are many liberated.
In the previous verse, it seems like he is not showing ignorance of self-interest by Krishna's will. That's what it appears. He is not showing ignorance of self-interest by Krishna's will. That's what it appears in the purport.
No. What is clear from the first purport is that Arjuna is always following Krishna's will because he's a devotee. And anybody who follows Krishna's will exhibit good qualities. So that Arjuna is under Krishna's will is clear from that purport.
Yeah.
In the second verse, in the second purport, it is clear that Arjuna is showing ignorance of his real self-interest.
First purport shows?
That Arjuna is following Krishna's will.
He's not showing his ignorance of his real self-interest by Krishna's will?
No. It simply shows that Arjuna is following Krishna's will. If you follow Krishna's will, you will have certain features, good qualities.
Then according to you, then this ignorance is happening in this verse, not in
no,
this
verse. No. Everything is simultaneous and from that point. The time when Krishna tells Arjuna, look at these Kurus. From that point onwards, delusion happens. From that point onwards, that delusion happens.
But is it mentioned somewhere in your verse?
Here, Baladeva Devushan.
Is it?
Yeah. See here. This is his commentary to text 27. Introduction to 27. Atha Sarveshwaro Dayalu Krishna Sa Parikara Atma Upadeshena Vishwam Udidhirshuhu Arjunam Shishyam Kartum Tat Swadharme Api Yudhe Mahimsyat Sarva Bhutani Iti Shruti Artha Abhasena Adharmatam Abhasya Tam Samoham Kritavan. Let me read out the translation. What is this introduction to? Yeah. The merciful Lord of all beings, desiring to deliver the universe through instructions to his dear associate, put Arjuna under illusion, making it appear that his duty to fight was against religious principles through a distortion of the philosophy of non-violence mentioned in the Shruti with Mahimsya Sarva Bhutani. Do not commit violence against any living entity. So it is from that point. See, now only is speaking what Krishna is telling. It's introduction to 27. Look at 27. He spoke to us. Look. Arjuna is beginning to speak. Idam Abravit. Arjuna Vacha.
Okay.
So from that point he is under Krishna's special influence. From this point he is under Krishna's special influence. And just before this, you see, he said.
Proper writing about quote.
See? Just behold, O Partha, all the Kurus assembled here. 25. So from this we understand that Krishna is under, Arjuna is under Krishna's will. A devotee means he is under Krishna's will.
So you could at best say,
this sentence is what reconciles Prabhupada's opposing statements.
No, I don't think so.
Yes, because the first purport establishes that he is following Krishna's will. The second purport establishes that he is showing ignorance of his real self-interest. And this statement establishes that both are happening simultaneously. So both are true.
That we can say, both are true, that's all we can say.
Yes.
Simultaneously it is his compassion, an actual compassion, also it is a didactic value for the conditioned souls.
Yes.
That you can say. Simultaneously
yes.
It is both.
Yes, yes. It is simultaneously both. That it is not that this is correct and that is wrong, it is not that that is correct, this is wrong.
It's two things happening at the same time.
Yes. Yes. two things are happening at the same time.
In fact, you could say there is one thing happening at this thing.
That's why I keep saying there are two levels.
Yeah.
One is the lesson that we are supposed to learn.
Okay.
And the second is what is reality.
Okay.
Many times in the purports, Prabhupada just paraphrases the text. So if the text says something, Prabhupada will simply repeat it, that's all. Whatever it may be.
Like
in Krishna book you'll find like these ones. These purports. Many more, you'll see later on. It is not the Siddhanta. It's simply a paraphrase of that verse, that's all.
Which verse? I mean, what is whatever the what are you referring to here?
Sometimes Prabhupada just paraphrases what exactly, like here we saw, no? Duryodhana statement, I'll take. Look, his conclusion that he would come out of the battle victorious was well ascertained. This is simply well ascertained by Duryodhana, that's all.
Yeah.
That's all. It is just a purport simply means, purport doesn't mean final conclusion of Shastra.
Mm-hmm.
It is simply the intended meaning of that particular statement, that's all. Purport literally means intended meaning. Tatparya is the original Sanskrit. So he is only explicating what Duryodhana has in mind. This is not Siddhanta. So everything, every sentence of Prabhupada in every sentence or every phrase of Prabhupada is not to be taken as Siddhanta, final Siddhanta. Sometimes he is just explaining that particular point, that's all. For Siddhanta you'll have to scroll through a little later, only then you'll find it. Prabhupada at least gives a few Siddhantic statements. I mean, much more. Usually the commentators don't do that. They generally don't do it. Because you are supposed to let the text speak for itself. But that requires good intelligence. So Prabhupada is one of those few commentators who manages to liberally distribute a lot of Siddhanta in the commentary. This is Siddhanta Varshini. We'll continue tomorrow. Not tomorrow. Monday.
Monday you finish it. That's all.
Yeah.
Is it?